The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Don McLaughlin stars as David Harding Counterspy from 1949. We'll also hear an episode of Baby Snooks, and John Patrick and Helen Troy star in Cecil and Sally from 1930. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, an episode of Baby Snooks, and John Patrick and Helen Troy star in Cecil and Sally from 1930. Right now, Don McLaughlin stars as David Harding Counterspy from 1949 on an episode entitled The Case of the Arrogant Arsonist, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Pepsi-Cola, P-E-P-S-I, that's your smartest cola buy. Pepsi-Cola presents Counterspy.
Washington calling David Harding, Counterspy. Washington calling David Harding, Counterspy.
Harding, Counterspy, calling Washington.
United States Counterspies, especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad.
Tonight, the case of the arrogant arsonist. Another Counterspy report to the American people. Brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday by Pepsi-Cola.
Pepsi-Cola hits the spot. Two full glasses, that's a lot.
That's right. You heard what they said. Two full glasses of sparkling Pepsi from one big 12-ounce bottle. You're getting an extra glassful. And what a delicious glassful. The most refreshing, delightful cola that ever tickled your taste. You can't top Pepsi's tangy flavor. And that big, big bottle saves you money, goes twice as far. Pepsi's America's big, big favorite. And America's biggest cola value. So why take less when Pepsi is best? Whenever you reach for refreshment, remember,
why take less when Pepsi's best?
And now to Counterspy. One of the most despicable of all crimes is the malicious setting of fire. Vilest of all criminals is the professional arsonist. We go back some years to a winter evening in Berlin, Germany. Two men stand back from the crowd, watching the firemen fight their hopeless battle against the flames, swiftly devouring the large building. The small man smiles proudly and turns to his uniformed companion.
Exquisite. Exquisite, eh, Mr. Dietrich?
Yes, Gratz. Very beautiful.
Did you ever see such wonderful flames? They dance like the lovely girls of the ballet, eh?
Gratz, tonight will be a turning point in history.
I have no interest in history, Mr. Dietrich. I'm an artist, but with good business sense. Now that my work is done, there's the matter of the 50,000 marks.
You have earned your money well, Gratz. When you put the torch to the Reichstag, you've started a flaming symbol that will rage for years to come.
That was February 27th, 1933, the infamous Reichstag fire in Berlin. And though Hitler's Germany has since been crushed, sparks of that fire still smolder, The greed and ruthlessness that started it still survive and flourish. 3 weeks ago, in Tangier, North Africa, Carl Dietrich, still calm, still arrogant, waited in his sumptuous office.
Your phone call to Wolf in New York is ready, Mr. Dietrich.
Thank you, Nina. Hello, Wolf. Dietrich.
Did you get my message, Mr. Dietrich?
Yes. Miss Campo decoded it properly.
Ah, then I'll go right ahead and destroy the account books, as I said in the message.
You'll do nothing of the kind.
But, Mr. Dietrich, the federal grand jury meets here in New York at the end of next week. They're going to investigate all exporting companies.
So you said, Wolf.
They'll subpoena our books. They'll have a record of all the transactions.
Don't let it worry you.
But don't you see, they'll find out that my exporting company is just a dummy for supplying your combine with potential war materials.
Just leave it to me, Wolf.
No, what can you do, Mr. Dietrich? You're thousands of miles away. I'll be ruined. I'll kill myself before I let them put me in jail.
Wolf, stop talking like an idiot. I'll handle everything. I'm taking the first plane for New York.
Attention, Mr. Harding, in statistical department. Mr. Harding, in statistical. Please come to communications section immediately. Urgent cold radiogram just received from Tangier.
All right, Peters, switch that message to Channel 4. Adjust the speed of the turntable.
Right, Mr. Harding. These electronic decoders the laboratory boys developed certainly save time, and we have to decode in a hurry.
Oh, hold it, Peters. You started from the beginning.
Agent Robeson, counter-spy transmitter LC-4, Tangier, North Africa, to Harding Headquarters, Washington. Carl Dietrich and his secretary, Nina Campo, left here by plane, 1500 Tangier time. According to passports, their destination is New York. Investigation shows Dietrich's departure was hasty and unexpected. It followed an overseas phone call with New York. That is all.
That tip you passed along the grapevine to Eric Wolf in New York worked, huh, Dave?
Looks that way, Peter.
He certainly pegged Wolf for the jittery type. He smells trouble, and right away he sends for Papa Dietrich. That was a smart stunt not to pull Wolf in for questioning.
Well, Wolf's only a small cog in Dietrich's setup, Peter. He's just the man who ships the supplies to the Marshall Plan countries.
And you want the big boys, Dietrich?
Yes. It's Dietrich who engineers the trick of getting such war potential items as oil, steel, and chemicals transshipped to his customers and nations outside the Marshall Plan.
Well, it looks like we'll be able to reel in the big fish now.
Yeah. As long as Dietrich was operating from his Tangier headquarters, he was out of our reach.
Now all we have to do is nail him when he steps off the plane in New York.
Well, I'm not having Dietrich picked up, Peters, yet.
Hmm?
Dietrich's a shrewd operator. We need direct evidence against him.
So we go to New York, Dave?
That's right, Peter. We go to New York and we stand by until Dietrich and Wolf give us the evidence we want.
J-12 to Mr. Harding, New York field office.
Go ahead, J-12.
Dietrich and Secretary Nina Campo registered at Hotel Tremont. Suites 1803 and 1804. Eric Wolf was waiting for them in lobby. The three have just entered Dietrich's suite. That is all.
Wolf, you'll join us in a drink, huh?
No, thank you, Mr. Dietrich.
You, Nina?
The usual, I suppose.
The usual, Mr. Dietrich.
Mr. Dietrich, the grand jury convenes at the end of the week.
Yes, Wolf, I know.
How can you be so calm?
I have a calm nature.
I won't have a chance. My books will... They'll expose everything. I'll be finished. Something's got to be done. You've got to save me, Mr. Dietrich.
For heaven's sake, well, stop that disgusting whining. Here's your drink, Nina.
Thank you, Mr. Dietrich.
Wolf, don't you realize I have as much to lose as you have? More. You think I ran the risk of coming here just for pleasure? I have millions at stake.
But if our account books are taken before the grand jury,
then... Let me worry about those books, Wolf. Ah, that should be Gratz, the gentleman I'm expecting. Nina, let him in, please.
Of course, Mr. Dietrich.
And Nina.
Yes, Mr. Dietrich.
Keep that door to the foyer closed in case it is not locked.
Certainly.
Hello, Nina.
God. Well, come in. Why are you dressed in overalls?
It was Dietrich's idea, precaution. I'm posing as a hotel utility man.
And Mr. Dietrich's in the other room waiting for you.
And you, Nina?
This will give you an idea.
Oh, Nina, darling. We shouldn't take chances like this.
Grant, how long do I have to go on working for Dietrich?
Nina, you took the job with Dietrich, so we'd have inside information on anything especially good.
But what's wrong with his knowing about us?
Then Dietrich wouldn't trust you. If we're going to get what we want, he must have complete faith in you. Nina, darling, I promise you, after this deal, we'll have enough money to be free of Dietrich forever. Now help me with these overalls. I better get inside.
Oh, Grant, come in. I want you to meet Mr. Wolf. This is Mr. Grant.
Mr. Wolf?
How do you do? A pleasure.
Wolf, my old friend Gratz is going to attend to your account books. He's going to destroy them.
What? Destroy them? Well, that would give us away. You said so yourself.
I believe you have a supply of kerosene oil on hand in your warehouse.
Yes, for export next week.
That kerosene is not going to be exported.
Not?
Your warehouse is going up in smoke. I had Gratz come up from Argentina especially for the assignment. Gratz specializes in fires.
The Reichstag was my masterpiece.
Tomorrow morning, Wolf, Gratz will visit you at your warehouse. He will pose as an insurance inspector.
He will show me through the building, and I will select the best way to approach the problem.
The evening after next, Wolf, your warehouse will be destroyed. An unfortunate accident.
But, Mr. Dietrich, what if they find out it isn't an accident?
Wolf, I, Hans Gratz, am a perfectionist. When I create an accidental fire, believe me, it's accidental.
Peters in patrol car 3 to Harding, New York field office.
Go ahead, Peters.
Wolf just came out of the Hotel Tremont. He visited Dietrich for an hour.
All right, Peters. Have J-12 keep on Wolf's trail.
Gotcha.
Also tell J-9 to stick close to Dietrich when and if he leaves the hotel. And one more thing, Peters.
Yes?
Assign a man to shadow Dietrich's secretary. I'm curious to see where Nina Campbell fits into this picture.
Gratz, I waited for you this afternoon at your hotel. What happened?
My work at Wolf's warehouse took longer than I expected. I was going to call you here at your hotel, but I didn't want to take a chance with Dietrich around.
Will he be coming out of the living room in a minute? First, I want to know something.
Anything, darling.
You said last night that after this deal, we'd be free of him.
We will, I promise.
But he's paying you only $5,000. Darling, that's not enough money for us to get away and live.
I have a plan, Nina. A plan that will build that $5,000 into $100,000. Hello, Mr. Dietrich.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Grant. Did Miss Campbell keep you entertained?
I'm afraid I'm dull company, Mr. Dietrich.
I don't think Gratz thinks so. Do you, Gratz?
Miss Campo is always pleasant to be with.
There, Nina, you see. Well, Gratz, how did your inspection trip go?
Excellent, excellent. I'm going back to the warehouse tonight to prepare for tomorrow evening.
And Wolf understands what his part is to be?
Perfectly.
I don't want any mistakes, Gratz.
Mr. Dietrich, there'll be no mistakes tomorrow night. Everything will go according to plan.
Mr. Harding, J-12 is on the radio telephone with a report for you.
Good. This is Harding. Relay J-12 in on circuit 5.
J-12, patrol car 4, reporting to Harding.
Go ahead, J-12.
Wolf left his apartment at 9 p.m. and drove around town for 50 minutes. He just parked his car outside his warehouse. He's been sitting there about, wait a second.
What is it?
He got out of his car. Now he's opening the warehouse door and going in.
Well,
Stand pat, J-12. Don't follow him in. I don't want to scare him. Peters and I are on our way down.
This may be it, Peters. You think Wolf's going into his warehouse for his records, Dave?
Well, that's the way I expected him to react. If he does take those books out, he may deliver them to Dietrich. Let's go.
Gratz.
Over here, Wolf, near the rear door.
You're 3 minutes late, Wolf.
I waited outside a little first. You told me to make sure I wasn't seen coming in here. Is everything ready, Gratz?
Of course.
Amazing. How simply Mr. Dietrich solved such difficult problems. I thought I'd never get out of this difficulty, but soon my worries will be over.
Yes. Mr. Dietrich is a remarkable gentleman.
Hadn't we better get over to the kerosene drums so you can start the fire?
Fire will start right here, with this pile of excelsior.
But the kerosene's at the other end of the building, near the office where the account books are. Gratz, we can't take a chance. The fireman may get here and put the fire out before it gets that far.
I told you, Wolf, I'm a perfectionist. Nothing can save this warehouse once I put a match to this excelsior.
How can you be sure? How can you?
My dear Wolf, there are secrets to every trade. For example, look over there on the floor behind you.
Huh? Well, where do you mean? I don't see anything particular.
As you said before, Wolf, soon all your worries will be over. You were right. You and all your worries are going up in smoke.
Back to Counter Spy in just a moment. But first,
Pepsi-Cola hits the spot. Two full glasses, that's a lot. Lots more value, lots more zest. Why take less when Pepsi's best?
More and more, among fellows and girls, among mothers and dads, you hear that sane and sensible question, why take less when Pepsi's best? No budget, no allowance ever had a better friend than tangy, sparkling Pepsi-Cola. Because one big 12-ounce Pepsi bottle gives you two delicious drinks. That's twice as much tangy taste, twice as much delicious Pepsi to go just twice as far. That's why more and more families say, why take less when Pepsi is best? Yes, families like yours and mine, families all over America, they're all saying, why take less when Pepsi is best?
Pepsi-Cola hits the spot, tastes terrific when you're hot, more and better than the rest. Why take less when Pepsi's best?
Today, tomorrow, always. Get America's biggest cola value. Take home a carton of six big, big Pepsi bottles. Insist on Pepsi at the store and say Pepsi at the fountain. Say Pepsi at the stand. Say Pepsi. Whenever you reach for refreshment, remember,
why take less when Pepsi's best?
And now, back to Counter Spy. The street before the Wolf Warehouse is a black mass of people as three fire companies fight the towering flames. Back of the fire lines, David Harding, in a counter-spy patrol car, with his assistant, Harry Peters, is receiving a report from another agent.
Well, Mr. Harding, I was waiting outside the warehouse for Wolf, as you ordered. About 5 minutes after he had entered, I saw the flames. I tried to get in there to save Wolf, but no go.
You better get those burns on your hands attended to, Edward.
Right.
Chief, I don't get it. Wolf walks into that warehouse, and 5 minutes later, it goes up like a matchbox.
Well, it's got the fire marshal puzzle, too, Peters. That warehouse was equipped with every fire prevention device, including a sprinkler system.
The only angle I can see is that Wolf became panicky. He was afraid we were getting too close, so he decided to get rid of his books by faking an accidental fire. But he was trapped in the warehouse. You go along with me?
Well, that's a possibility, Peters, but there's also a possibility that Wolf got out by a rear exit. We should have had an agent at that rear exit.
Yes, but Dave, you agree with me about the books.
Yes, Peters, but I'm holding off any other speculation until we get a laboratory analysis of that fire.
Hello?
Nina, come in, darling.
I can only stay a minute, Graf. I told Dietrich I was going for a short walk. He said you told him everything went according to plan.
Almost.
Well, Dietrich said it was perfect.
It was, Nina. For us. But not for Dietrich.
I don't understand you.
I told you I'm going to build that $5,000 into $100,000. Remember?
Yes.
In that fire tonight, Dietrich got only one of the two things he wanted. Wolf's death. Unfortunately, the second thing, the account books, they were not burned in the flames.
What do you mean?
I removed the account books from the warehouse. They are now right here in my closet.
Oh.
It would have been a crime to destroy them for only $5,000. After all, Nina, such valuable documents. Really a crime, don't you agree, darling?
Yes, yes. Dietrich could pay anything to get his hands on those books, wouldn't he?
$100,000 will be enough. We mustn't be pigs.
Oh, Graz. Graz, you're wonderful.
Nina, I can hardly wait to see Karl Dietrich's face when I tell him the price is $100,000.
$100,000.
And well worth the price, Dietrich, don't you think?
$100,000. Blackmail. And to think I once trusted you, Graz.
Well, we all make mistakes, Dietrich. Some are more expensive mistakes than others. Yours will cost you $100,000.
And what if I don't pay?
How can you afford not to pay? Your illicit trading business is worth millions of dollars to you. Why should you jeopardize it for a paltry $100,000? The grand jury meets Friday, Dietrich. I shall give you until Thursday to deliver the money.
I got your message. You get over here to the field office right away, Dave. What's up?
The laboratory analysis on that fire is ready for us, Peter. First, that warehouse was set ablaze by probably the cleverest arsonist in the business.
Huh?
Next, the flames spread quickly because of oil in the warehouse.
That black smoke, huh? We guessed that last night.
Yeah, but here's something we didn't guess. Our chemist found globules of kerosene oil in the sprinkler system pipes and valves. The sprinkler system was apparently loaded with kerosene instead of water. As the lab reconstructed, the arsonist started a small fire in the rear of the warehouse.
The heat opened the sprinkler valves and the kerosene took care of the rest.
That's right.
A real professional job.
Well, now about Wolf. Traces of human bone were found in the ruins. There's no doubt Wolf died in that fire. There's a good possibility he was murdered.
Yes. It might have been convenient for Dietrich to get Wolf out of the way.
Very convenient. Dietrich would be burning two birds with one match.
We can't pick Dietrich up on that rap, Chief. According to our reports, he was in his hotel room all evening.
Yes, I know. But there's another... No, just a minute. Harding.
J-12 reporting, sir.
Go ahead, J-12.
Nina Campbell left her room at the Tremont Hotel. She's now visiting room 907 at the Hotel Sergeant.
Okay, J-12, let me have a full report when Nina Campo returns to the sergeant.
Right.
Nina Campo? Hotel sergeant, what's that about, Dave?
Dietrich's secretary, Nina Campo, left her hotel last night, Peters.
You think maybe she's the one who put the torch to the warehouse?
No. Nina Campo walked out of her hotel at 11, almost an hour after the fire began.
Where'd she go?
The same place where she is now, room 907 in the hotel sergeant. And Peters, the occupant of 907, is a man named Graz.
Graz?
A checkup shows he arrived in New York Sunday on a plane from Argentina.
Then maybe Graz is the firebug.
It could be. There's more. J-12 got into the room next to his. He overheard Nino Campo and Graz making arrangements to meet there this afternoon again.
Oh, it's too bad we haven't got a detector phone in there.
But we have. I had it installed this morning.
Oh, I might have known.
Peters, I'm very anxious to hear the recording of the conversation between Graz and Nina Campo. There's no telling what interesting things those two are saying to each other. What did Dietrich say, Nina?
You'll get the money tomorrow, Graz.
That's very sensible of Dietrich.
Now, it's wonderful to see him squirm. Graz, are the books still in that closet?
Yes, of course. Why?
Well, they mean so much to us. I was concerned about your leaving them here.
They're perfectly safe, Nina.
You could never tell.
Nina, except myself, only one person knows where those books are. And I can trust you, can't I?
Of course, darling. Always.
Well, Peters?
Dave, this record winds it up for us.
Not quite.
Aren't you ever satisfied?
Dave? Yes, when I'm sure that people like Gratz and Dietrich get what they deserve, the electric chair.
Then what's next?
Well, that's up to Gratz and the way he feels about Nina Campo.
What do you mean?
Well, something Gratz said to Miss Campo. He said, "And I can trust you, can't I?" Peters, I have an idea that Gratz's faith in Miss Campo is going to be sadly twisted.
Come in, Gratz. You haven't brought the books with you, Gratz. I have the money ready, but you were to bring the books.
I brought this instead.
What do you expect to accomplish with a gun? Hold me up.
We'll talk about it in the other room. Move along.
Very well.
Stand right there.
As you say.
Where's Nina Campo?
Why?
Where is she?
In the next room.
Tell her to come in here.
What is she to do with this?
Dietrich, this gun can do ugly damage. Tell Nina Campo to come in here.
Nina!
Yes, Mr. Dietrich?
Come in here, please.
Right away.
Now, really, Gratz, what is this all about?
As if you didn't know.
Yes, Mr. Dietrich, what is...
I was taken aback by Gratz's gun, too, Nina.
I don't understand, Gratz.
You can stop acting, both of you.
Mr. Dietrich, what's the matter with Gratz?
Nina, you really had me fooled. Every minute you spent with me was for him.
Gratz, I don't know what you're talking about.
You were just using me all the time.
Please, I don't understand.
Where are they, Nina?
They?
The books. Wolf's account books. The ones you stole from the closet in my hotel room.
I didn't, Gratz. You must believe me, I didn't.
A nice scheme Dietrich had, Nina. Using you to keep tabs on me. Very clever.
Believe me, I didn't steal those books.
You were the only one who knew where they were. And that's why you were so worried yesterday. You were afraid I'd hidden them somewhere else.
No.
And when I was out this morning, you came into my room.
That's not true. Ask Mr. Dietrich. Tell him, Mr. Dietrich. Tell him I haven't left here all day.
But, Nina, you did.
That's a lie. You know I wasn't out of here. Tell him the truth, Mr. Dietrich.
Nina left the hotel this morning and was gone for an hour.
Mr. Dietrich, he'll kill me.
What a pity.
Dietrich, it's a pity for both of you.
Believe me, Gratz, I had nothing to do with this. It's all quite new to me. Evidently, Nina has played us both for fools.
It won't work, Dietrich. You're both going to die.
Wait, Gratz, don't shoot.
Oh, I'm not going to shoot.
What?
I'm a perfectionist, remember. I deal in fire. Dietrich, you and Nina will have the same accident which disposed of Wolf. You see this metal tube? An incendiary. All I do is release the cap, then lock this door from the outside. In no time at all, it will be over for you, too.
Drop that gun, Gratz.
Never!
Oh, my hand.
Get his gun, Peters. Beside that chair. You got it, Liv.
He was going to kill us. Thank heavens you arrived, whoever you are.
Dietrich, I don't think you'll like who we are.
What?
This is David Harding, chief of the United States counter-spies.
Counter-spies?
Those account books of Wolf. They're in the counter-spy New York field office, ready for presentation to the federal grand jury in the morning.
What?
Yes, Gratz, we got them out of your room, not Nina Campo. I had an idea that their sudden absence would provide the evidence I wanted, and it did. Evidence, Gratz, that will finish both your career and Dietrich's. In the electric chair.
When your friends drop in, be generous, but be thrifty too. Serve plenty of delicious Pepsi-Cola. Pepsi's big 12-ounce bottle gives you not just one sparkling glassful, but two. Get a carton of six and serve 12 delicious drinks. Yes, Pepsi is America's biggest cola value. You get twice the tangy taste, twice the refreshment, twice the Pepsi. So why take less when Pepsi's best? Whenever you reach for refreshment, Remember,
Pepsi-Cola hits the spot. Two full glasses, that's a lot. Lots more value, lots more zest. Why take less when Pepsi's best?
Tune in every Tuesday and Thursday, same time, same station, to Counter Spy. Listen on Thursday for the exciting Counter Spy case of a courageous come-on.
Our Counter Spy case on Thursday is one of the most unusual we've yet presented. In this case, you'll meet the girl who was good at being bad until she saw a blind spot. The promoter who believed the sword was mightier than the pen and used it to escape. And the extraordinary half-man who had enough courage for two ordinary men. Be sure to be tuned in on Thursday, day after tomorrow, to
Case of the Courageous Come-On on Counter Spy. Tonight's Counter Spy program originated in New York, was directed by Leonard L. Bass, written by Edward J. Adamson, and featured Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer with music by Jesse Crawford. Counter Spy is a Phillips H. Lord production for Pepsi-Cola. Enjoy some Pepsi ice cold tonight.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio and Don McLaughlin as David Harding, Counter Spy. First broadcast on radio on September 6, 1949. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, John Patrick and Helen Troy star on an episode of Cecil and Sally from 1930. But first, here's Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Whenever you drive the car, there is always an unseen, unwelcome passenger with you. That passenger is danger. The danger of a traffic accident. Unfortunately, every person seems to have the absurd notion that he bears a charmed life, that no traffic accident can happen to him. But it can, and too often it does. So when you're behind that wheel, don't take chances. Obey all traffic rules. Drive safely for life.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks. Well, it had to happen sooner or later. Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has received a jury summons and must appear in court today. To make matters worse, this is Daddy's busy day at the office. And as the scene opens, we find him dressing hurriedly and in a none too pleasant mood. Listen.
Fine thing. 5 million people in this city and they have to pick me for jury duty. I'll give the guy life.
Good morning, Daddy.
What's good about it?
Huh?
Nothing. Look out, Snooks. I'm in a hurry.
Going.
I have to be in court in half an hour. Where's my pants?
You got them on.
Oh, well, never mind. I'll look for them myself.
Where are you going, Daddy?
I told you I have to go to court.
Why?
I've been called for jury duty. I've got to appear in a suit.
What kind of suit?
They didn't tell me. It can be any kind of a suit.
You want to wear my Mickey Mouse suit?
Snooks, this has nothing to do with clothes. Someone is suing somebody else.
Why?
I don't know. I'll find out when I get there.
Why do you have to go, Daddy?
Because I'm going to be a member of the jury.
I want to join, too.
Now, don't start any of that nonsense. In the first place, little girls don't serve on juries.
Why?
Because that's the law. A jury is composed of 11 jurors and a foreman.
What for?
He gives the verdict. All juries must have foremen.
You said they had 11.
They have got 11, but they have foremen besides.
They have 15 men?
No, they only have 12.
Huh?
Yes, there's 11 men on juries, and with a foreman makes it 12.
11 and 4 is 12?
No, 11 and 4 is 15. But the foreman in this case happens to be just one man, and he's the foreman. Sometimes the jury has 12 jurymen, and they're all ladies.
The foreman, too?
Exactly.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
Listen, Snooks, it doesn't make any difference how I feel. I still have to go to court and serve on that broken-down jury. Understand?
Understand. What's a jury?
What did I just get through telling you?
11 and 4 is 12, and all the men is ladies. That's what you told me.
I didn't say anything of the kind. If they were all ladies on the jury, what would I be doing there?
I know.
Now, you stop that. Getting more like your mother every day. Now, let me finish dressing.
I want to go with you, Daddy.
You can't go with me. They don't allow children in court.
Why?
Because it's a very serious thing. The only people present are the lawyers, the judge, and jury. We have to decide whether the man is innocent or guilty.
Which man?
The man that's being tried.
What's he trying to do, Daddy?
He's trying to get free. Today, he gets his hearing.
Is he deaf? Is he a deaf man?
No, he's not deaf.
You don't have to yell. I ain't deaf either.
Well, then, don't bother me with questions.
Why?
Because I'm in a hurry. If I don't get to court on time, they'll hold me in contempt.
Where's that?
It's no place. It's a breach of the law, and I'll get a fine.
Get what?
Fine.
You like it, Daddy?
No, I hate it. But I have to go just the same. When people are called for jury duty, they have to go because they receive subpoenas.
I want some peanuts, too.
I didn't say some peanuts. I said subpoenas. Subpoenas.
Well, what do you have to do there?
Well, as soon as I get to court, I'm challenged by both lawyers.
I want to see you fight them.
I don't fight them. They interrogate me.
Does it hurt?
No, it doesn't hurt. It simply means the lawyers ask me a lot of questions before they swear me in.
Huh?
I have to swear.
Do you make the lawyers mad, Daddy?
Nobody makes me mad!
Why do you have to swear at them?
I don't swear at the lawyers. I take an oath that I'll see justice served properly. Then the court is called to order. The lawyers come in with their briefs.
Is that all they wear?
They don't wear their briefs. They hand them to the judge.
Ain't he got any of his own?
Why, no. The only briefs he's got are those he gets from the lawyers. Then you know what he does?
He puts them on.
Snooks, these are not the kind of briefs people wear. These briefs are just paper.
Mommy's got so...
I don't care what Mommy's got. Now, these papers contain the evidence in the case. That's how the lawyers present the bare facts. Is everything clear to you now?
Uh-huh. Nobody wears nothing.
Everybody is fully dressed. The evidence is presented, the witnesses testify, the lawyers argue the case, and then the judge charges the jury.
How much?
He doesn't charge the money. He places the case in the hands of the jury. We weigh the testimony and bring in the verdict.
I want to go see you do it.
No, and I've got to leave right now.
Come on, take me with you, all.
You'll what?
I'll shake my head till my head falls off.
Oh, please, Snooks, don't make any trouble now. I'll be late for court.
Take me with you, Dad.
No. Now, look here. I'll show you what happens there. Satisfied?
Satisfied.
All right. You'll be the defendant, and I'll be your lawyer. Now, you take the stand.
Where shall I take it, Dad?
Nowhere. Just sit in that chair and hurry. Now, you were charged with stealing some cookies from the kitchen.
Am I?
Yes. First, I have to swear you in. Repeat after me. I solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me.
I solemnly swear to smell the fruit, the whole fruit.
Never mind. I'll just examine you.
Shall I stick up my tongue?
No. No! I'm going to prove that you didn't take those cookies from that cookie jar.
You can't do it.
Why not?
Because I took them.
Well, that's fine. You're convicted. Then stay dressed. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yes, sir. The mothers of all the gang are sure being rushed for lots of Kellogg's Pep these days. Because, of course, it's such a super delicious whole wheat flake cereal. And because it's the prize package where you get those brand new exciting comic buttons all the fellas and girls are collecting. Real true-to-life pictures of your favorite funny sheet characters like Uncle Walt and Skeezeeks and Orphan Annie and Superman, of course. Boy, those pictures are so doggone real, you'd think they were gonna talk. They're done up in full comic strip colors on bright white enameled buttons that really show up when you pin them on your jacket or dress or cap. What's more, these new comic buttons are easy as 1, 2, 3 to get. You don't send in any money, not even a box stop, and you can't even buy them anywhere. All you do is to ask Mom to get you a package or two of Kellogg's Pep, because that's the easy way and the only way you can get your exclusive prize. Just look inside the package and see which prize you find. One of those exciting new comic buttons or a military insignia or warplane button. Remember, these swell prizes come only in packages of P.E.P. Pep, made by Kellogg's of Battle Creek.
Here's Sally. Are you thirsty?
I'm starving.
I said thirsty, not hungry.
Well, I'm both.
Let's go in here to the soda fountain and get something to drink, huh?
Sir, I just love this place.
Go ahead in.
Oh, I just love ice cream parlors.
Shall we sit at the counter?
Oh, no. Let's get a booth. It's so much nicer.
I don't think there are any. We'll have to take a table.
Oh, I hate tables.
Well, you want to sit at the counter? We'll get waited on sooner.
Oh, no, let's take that table. That's better than nothing.
Well, let's don't stand here arguing. Everyone's looking at us now.
I'm glad they are. I have on my new shoes.
They're not looking at your shoes, though.
Cecil?
Huh?
Well, aren't you going to hold my chair out for me?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure.
Cecil, have you got my vanity case?
I guess I have. You gave me a pocket full of junk.
May I have it, please?
You look all right.
I know it, but I want to see who's sitting behind me.
There. Why don't you turn around and look instead of using a mirror?
Oh, that would be impolite.
I fail to see the difference.
Cecil, can you see the girl sitting right in back of me?
The one in the gray hat?
Yes.
Well, what about her?
Do you think she's pretty?
Oh, I should say so. Golly, what eyes.
Oh, I don't think so much of her.
Well, I do.
Goodness, you don't have to rave about her.
Gee, Sally, you asked me what I thought about her.
Oh, stop talking.
All right. I can't understand you.
What are we going to have?
Oh, I always order the same thing. Chocolate ice cream soda.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Here's a waitress.
May I take your order, please?
Yeah. I want a chocolate ice cream soda. What do you want, Sally?
Well, wait a minute now. Let's see.
Do you want a malted milk?
Oh, goodness, no. I can't stand them.
How about a soda?
No, I want something else.
You better hurry and decide. She can't stand here waiting all night.
Now, don't rush me, Cecil. I get all mixed up.
Well, how about a parfait?
Well, what kind?
Oh, strawberry.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. Have you any orange ice?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, Oh, no, I don't think I want that.
Oh, do you know what you want?
Yes, but I can't think of it.
Well, for cat's sake, decide on something.
What did you get, Cecil?
I told you, a chocolate ice cream soda.
No, I don't want that. Good enough.
Take anything.
Of course I won't take anything. You don't mind waiting, do you?
Oh, no. How would you like a root beer?
Oh, no, I want something with ice cream in it.
How about an ice cream cone?
Aw, Cecil, imagine eating an ice cream cone.
Well, it's got ice cream in it.
Oh, I think I'll take a strawberry phosphate.
I beg your pardon?
I said a strawberry phosphate.
She wants a strawberry phosphate.
Oh, yes. Now, that's a chocolate soda and a strawberry phosphate.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I've changed my mind.
Oh, Sally, let it go at that.
But I don't think I want that.
That's all right, waitress. You can bring that.
No. Wait a minute now. I won't take it.
Well, what do you wish in place of the strawberry phosphate?
I'll take, let's see now,
It looks like you're taking a vacation.
Oh, Cecil, you say the funniest things.
Oh, come on, Sally, come on.
Let's see now, you ordered a chocolate soda?
Yes.
No, I don't want that. Mm-mm.
Have you any apricot ice cream?
No, I'm sorry. We haven't any today.
Oh, good enough, and that's just what I wanted. You're sure you haven't any?
No, we haven't any.
You would want something they haven't got.
Oh, now I have to decide on something else.
Well, listen, Sally. Let her bring my soda while you're deciding, huh?
All right. You can bring his soda while I make up my mind.
Yes, ma'am.
Cecil, do you have to watch that girl in back of me?
Is there any harm in looking at her?
Well, you should be polite and talk to me.
All right. Hello, Sally. How are you? It's a nice day.
Oh, Cecil, don't be silly.
Hey, I know a trick that you can do with straws.
What?
Look, see, you take two straws and flatten them out like this and bend them in the middle and put them together. Look, and you can pop them.
That's no trick. I can do that.
Oh, what did you expect?
Don't, Cecil. People are looking at us.
That's all right. You've got on your new shoes.
Oh, please stop, Cecil. You act like a kid.
All right, Grandma. I'll stop.
Oh, Cecil, look. Coming in now. Do you think she's pretty?
No.
Why, Cecil, I do.
So do I, but I wouldn't say so and start a fight.
Why, Cecil, I wouldn't argue with you for a minute.
I know you wouldn't. You'd argue for half an hour. Have you decided what you're going to order?
Oh, goodness, I forgot all about it. And here she comes with your soda.
Here you are, sir. And has the lady decided?
I forgot all about it. Isn't that funny?
Oh, that's all right. Take your time.
Don't encourage her.
What is that you have, Cecil? That looks good.
I told you 10 times. It's a chocolate ice cream soda.
Oh, no, I don't like them. Oh, goodness.
You better wait on the other table. I'll call you when she decides.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Sally, come on. Get something.
I will.
Can I go ahead with my soda?
Oh, yes. Don't wait for me.
Thanks. This is good ice cream.
Cecil, I wonder what a rainbow delight is.
I don't know. Is there a picture of it there?
Yes.
Does it look good?
Well, it's pretty.
Why don't you order it?
Oh, no, I don't think I'd like it. I think I want something with a cherry on top of it.
Oh, get anything.
Oh, what do you think of a banana special?
Fine. Hooray. Shall I call a waitress?
Oh, no, wait a minute. I don't like bananas.
Don't bother me. I'm busy.
Let me see now. Do you think I could get a banana split without bananas?
What did you say?
Oh, no, I don't want that. Good enough.
Hand me the straws, please, Sally.
There.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Cecil, here's something that sounds good.
Get it.
It's called Lover's Delight.
Oh, you would pick out a drink with a name like that.
Very well, then I won't get it.
Now go ahead and get it, Sally.
No, you made fun of me, so I won't have it.
Oh, I wasn't making fun. Honest.
Go ahead and finish your soda. I'll think of something.
I finished it.
You've still got some on the bottom of the glass.
Oh, that's just a drop.
Oh, Cecil, don't do that. Put those straws down.
What's the matter? I like to do that. That's the only way you can get it all.
Cecil, now stop. Drink it, but don't make that noise with the straw.
Oh, you don't like it.
No, it's not nice.
Hooray! I like it.
Cecil, people are watching you.
Good.
Oh, please, Cecil, stop. If you don't, I'll walk out.
Oh, if you do, I'll take up the glass and follow you and keep it up.
Oh, Cecil, please stop.
I have to now. That's all there is. Shh. Here's old Whispering Hope again.
Has the lady decided what she wants?
No. The lady has gone into a trance.
Oh, Cecil.
Sally, do you want anything? Or shall I get a check and let's beat it?
Oh, no, I want something. Oh, goodness. Oh, I know what I want, Cecil.
Hallelujah, sister. Hey, take this down, quick.
I'm going to take a chocolate ice cream soda. Yes, sir, a chocolate ice cream soda. I wanted it all the time.
Are you tired of me, my darling? Did you mean those words you said? That has made me yours forever. Since the day that we were with, tell me, could you live life for? first each other met. How we spoke in warm affection. Words my heart can ne'er forget. Tell me, could you live life over? Could you make it otherwise? Are you tired of me, my darling? Answer only with your eyes. From the cheeks you thought so fair. Do you think I've grown cold-hearted beneath the load of woman's care? Tell me, could you live life over? Could you make it otherwise? Are you tired of me, my darling?
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and the Carter Family with Are You Tired of Me, Darlin' from 1934. We also heard John Patrick and Helen Troy as Cecil and Sally, first broadcast on radio on March 31st, 1930, and also Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.